Consumer Affairs will come to order. Welcome, everyone, and happy Valentine's Day. Committee, we have lots of treats here as you go through the morning. We've been very blessed with some treats. I'm not sure who they're from. Do we know?
Staff.
Thank you, staff. And our first item in business, we're going to go down to, we have three bills to work on. We're going to go down to the introduction of committee measures first.
Madam Chair, I would move that LC 1422, LC 1690, 1693, 1699, 1700, 1919 be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Kitts has moved LC 1422, 1690, 1693, 1699, 1700, and 1919 to be introduced as committee measures. Is there discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2147 and call forward. Bill Cross and Jim Bastuanas. He's coming with them. Okay, and Representative Jeff Barker. And the staff will read the summary.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2147 requires the Department of State Police to establish face pay for troopers and establishes the method for calculating that face pay. The proponents have also offered up a -1 amendment, which is in your packet, which requires that base pay be established incrementally by making this act operative on January 1, 2005 and have the base pay established no later than January 1, 2009. Thank you.
Morning.
Morning.
Jim, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. It's Bastuanas.
Correct.
Thank you. Please present.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Jeff Barker, and I'm a retired police lieutenant from Portland. I served at the Oregon State Police from 1970 to 1974, and I've been active in police labor for a quarter of a century. In Portland, as president of both the Portland Police Association and the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association, I've negotiated numerous contracts over the years, and we were always compared our salaries against other police departments in cities of similar sizes. We weren't compared to other occupations, the truck drivers, the clerks, and so on. Police should be compared to police for wages. Public employees are dedicated. It's not to detract from any other public employees, but for most law enforcement people, it's not just a career, it's truly a calling. We're there for the long haul, we're there for 25 or 30 years. The Oregon State Police enjoys an excellent reputation in law enforcement. It's a well-respected department, and especially the men and women who serve on the road. I want to tell you that in 1974, when I left the State Police, wages were part of the reason I left. The State Police wages were lower than a lot of other the bigger departments in the state, and I went to the city of Portland. After 4 years with the State Police, I was making $35 a month less, and all I had to do was to go to court one time, one court appearance, and I made more than the difference of that salary. And at that time I left, there were several other people. We kind of joked we were going to have the State Police Committee of the Portland Police Bureau, because we had a number of people left the State Police and went to work for Portland. I'm in here to testify in support of this bill, and mainly because police should be compared to police for the wages. That's the real issue there. It's hard to compare them to anything else. It's such a unique job. They're the ones who are out there seeing people at their worst. They're the ones out there helping. They're the ones going to the sound of the guns, not running the other way when the emergency arrives. So I would certainly appreciate the committee's support of this bill.
Could you tell us, Representative Barker, how we compare the state of Washington, for example?
I don't know off the top of my head. I saw that. I saw the numbers. I believe we're a little bit lower than the Washington State Patrol.
And as far as numbers, are we quite a bit less in numbers?
Yes, you are. And again, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. President Bastuanas probably has those numbers. But the state police, we probably had twice as many troopers in 1974 when I left than we do today. We used to patrol the freeways all the time. We would stop and help people disabled. When my daughter was going to college in Los Angeles, I had to make several trips a year down there, and I would drive from my home in the Portland area down to Los Angeles, and in the state of Oregon, I would frequently never see a state patrolman on I-5 for the entire length of the state.
Questions? Representative Kibbs.
Is that a bad thing?
I obey the speed law, so yes, it's a bad thing. And also, and I know you're joking, but it was really important, I think, to be out there helping people that were disabled. And I know a number of times I changed flat tires for women on the road when I worked I used to work the freeway from the Don Aurora Junction north, and I would help people all the time. And that's what you're out there for, especially at nighttime.
Paul?
In all seriousness, Representative Barker, I want to say thank you for taking the time to not only be here, but to educate me on this issue outside of the committee and giving me a heads up. As with Mr. Cross and President Botwinis, he's done a great job, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's continue.
Yeah, I need to get on to another committee meeting.
Okay, well, thank you, Representative Barker, for coming, and may I compliment you on your tie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Jim Botwinis. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I provided you with a rather thick packet of information this morning, and part of it is testimony, and I'm going to try and just do a little bit of ad-libbing here to avoid reading two pages of material to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Obviously, we're here today to testify on behalf of HB 2147. Our whole goal and purpose in this is to try and ensure that our troopers receive a level of compensation that is equal to their counterparts, and that we're not at the bargaining table having to worry about what other state employees get. And we have absolutely and hold all due respect for other state employees and what they do and the job they do and that they're dedicated to what they do, but our job is just not like their job. It's different. We put on a uniform, we put on a gun belt, we put on a bulletproof vest, and we go out and put ourselves in harm's way every day that we go to work. And I don't think there's too many other people that can say that they do that on any kind of a regular basis. This bill is modeled after legislation that was done in California several years ago because the CHP officers were having the same problem in essence that we're having today, which is we just can't seem to get into a catch-up mode and actually get equal to our counterparts. And they established a bill that made them compare to their top cities, and I think it was five, in California. So we chose the top five cities in the state of Oregon as our comparison point. And there are some charts to show basically where we stand at the five-year and the 10-year mark if this bill were in place and what the percentage differences are between us and those five agencies, which are Portland, Beaverton, Gresham, Salem, and Eugene. We believe that 2147 will go a long way toward restoring the balance in the wage package and ensuring that our organization, the Oregon State Police itself, remains a top-rate, first-class organization, which we believe that it should be. Obviously, we have a real concern now that given the current reduction in our workforce that our people are out there working under greater peril than they have ever worked under before. I'll tell you, I would not want to be a single trooper out of the Tualatin Patrol Office that's going to try and investigate a major crash on a multiple-lane freeway by yourself with the amount of traffic that's up there. That's just mind-boggling to me. I personally would not want to do it. So I guess bottom line for us is that our people are out there doing a very dedicated professional job, and we just want them to be paid in accordance with their counterparts. If you look at the charts that we have here, you can see on the internals using the five largest Oregon cities, at the five-year point, we're 14.4% behind, and at the 10-year mark, we're 7.7% behind. If we use the external states that surround us, at the five-year mark, we are 7.2% behind, and at the 10-year mark, we're 5.5% behind. And quite honestly, from my perspective, while these externals have been used for a long time by our organization, three of those four states really do not have economies that come close to matching that of Oregon: Idaho, Nevada, and California. Washington, I think we could show some comparison there, even though I don't think it's exactly the same as ours, but Washington and Oregon seem to kind of follow hand in hand whatever happens with their economy and unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. So the idea is to move away from those states, deal with our own internal economy, and compare to those organizations that are in our economy. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Questions for Jim?
Madam Chair,
Representative Shaw.
More of a comment than anything. It's irrefutable if you do a job that's totally different than anybody else, whether it be a public employee or an elected official getting paid by the government. I certainly don't want to do your job, but I'm darn glad you do. And I think during this time when whether we as elected officials or voters know what we're voting for and what we're doing or not, I think this is a good way to show that we do care about our state troopers. That's just pretty much all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I had a question, I guess Jim or Bill, either one of you, about the language in the bill that says that base pay includes employer contributions to retirement plans. So explain to me how that would work, and particularly in light of the changes that are contemplated in this legislative session to the public employee retirement system.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, the employer now, I mean, we realize that PERS is in the works of having changes made to it. We don't know where that would stand or where that ultimately is going to end up. As we stand right now, the employer picks up the 6% that the employees at one point in time years ago used to pay, and in lieu of a pay raise, they said, we'll pay your 6% for you, and then they pay an employer share. And this bill basically says that those retirement costs must be included as part of the base salary. So we're basically taking the true base, whatever that base may be, and then add retirement costs to that base and add longevities if they happen to apply to that base, and then average them out.
Follow up, and then Rep. Gerard.
Thanks. I'm still not. If we're comparing your salary to, say, a Portland police officer, and they're not in PERS, but they're in a comparable system that's administered by the city of Portland, does base pay include what the employer pays into the retirement fund? And so would we be averaging all the retirement funds that the people that you name in the bill are in, and then including what we pay into PERS for the state troopers, and saying those two have to come out to be the same?
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, yes. Even though Portland is not within the PERS system, they still have a retirement system that they use and that their employer pays money into. So that becomes part of the base pay equation that we would use for Portland's wage comparison to our wage comparison.
Representative Gerard.
I just want to say, in my district, in the past 3 years, I've seen three Oregon State Police troopers killed in the line of duty. One shot and two killed on the highway. So when you talk about the fact that they're in harm's way, that is very, very real. This is a good move, and I don't know how you ever really determine how much a person's life is worth when they go out and risk it every day. But please pass along my appreciation to the troopers in this state.
Thanks, sir.
Bill, did you want to add?
Madam Chair, yes. For the record, my name is Bill Cross, and I represent the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I just want to make a comment in terms of the recruitment and retention problems. Fairly recently, the state police have had retention problems because of the growing spread in terms of the younger troopers and the difference at, after 3 or 4 years of service and what they could make in Salem or Deschutes County or any of the other neighboring jurisdictions. And it has started becoming an issue even before the session began, when we've obviously lost some troopers and other troopers who've been pink slipped a couple times and are on the list are certainly looking, and we may not be able to do anything about that until we get more stabilized funding. Meantime, though, we are looking at over the next few years, I believe from 2001 to 2006, almost 50% of the troopers are retiring. So we will be losing a lot of experienced officers, and the next tier of troopers coming up will be those in the, you know, 4 to 12 years of experience, and we think that it be the retention problem will become even greater. So we do need to, we believe that's one of the important issues that this bill could address, especially when then the troopers that are retiring, the department's going to have to go out and recruit and hopefully be able to there again provide a pretty competitive package, you know, for potential recruits. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is we did ask the committee to look at some amendments that would defer any fiscal impact for the 03-05 budget period, obviously, you know, recognizing the current financial crisis that the state is in, and then allowing the bill to take effect in 05, but actually allowing all the way through January 1 of 2009 for it to be implemented, so that the state would have over a four-year period to either incrementally make the adjustments to gradually get them to a comparable level, so that there again the fiscal impacts would be something that could be addressed incrementally and spread out over a period of time. So that was the purpose of the Dash 1 amendments. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Seeing no questions,
I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, I now I'm confused, because the new Section 2 of your amendment says that the whole bill becomes operative January 1st of 2005, but I don't understand how that interrelates with the saying no later than January 1st of 2009 will establish a base pay. How does it become effective in 2005 if we don't have to do it until 2009?
The law goes, the way legislative council has constructed this, the law goes into effect January 1 of 2005 that they have to establish a base pay, but they don't, by putting in this language no later than January 1 of 2009, they have to meet the goal of establishing that base pay. So they have to, as of January 1 of 2005, start taking into account the base pay comparisons. And by January of 2009, they actually have to have established a comparable base pay.
Just a clarification, Madam Chair. Thank you. So in terms of when the state would start incurring the additional fiscal impact of the bill, what's the first year that we would actually be paying people more under this provision?
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, it could begin as early as somewhere in the 05-07 biennium. By making it effective January 1 of 2005, that allows the policy to be in place when they start negotiations. And that's when the department and the association start their negotiations, but they don't actually, the contract that they will affect won't go into place until the 05-07 biennium. So at that point, they could start incurring then additional salary costs to comply with this, and presumably, you know, they could do part of it in 05-07 and then the remainder in 07-09.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, if I may, our contracts run basically on the same cycles that the budgetary period does, the biennium that the legislature deals with. So our contract, we start bargaining, for example, we're bargaining now for a contract that will start July 1, '03 and expire June 30, '05. So this language would basically allow us, when we start bargaining January 1 of '05, it would allow us to use the language that's here for the contract that would start July 1, '05 to June 30, '07.
But my reading of the language is it wouldn't become mandatory for the state to do it until 2009.
There's nothing, I guess, that would, right, there's nothing that would require the state to do anything until January 1 of 09 if they didn't want to.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2147, seeing no more witnesses, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2147.
Madam Chair.
Representative Chitz.
I would move that we accept the Dash 1 amendment as amended to 2147.
Representative Kitts moves the Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 2147. Is there objection? Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move that we do pass recommendation, approve House Bill 2147 as amended to Ways and Means.
Representative Kitts has moved House Bill 2147 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Daigle.
Aye.
Representative Garrard.
Aye.
Representative Merkley.
Aye.
Representative Chalker.
Aye.
Representative Kipp.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative
Coates. Votes aye. Motion carries. Congratulations. And we're closing the work session on House Bill 2147. And I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 85. And I think it's still carried. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Close, members of the committee. I'm glad to add to your treats today with a sweetheart of a bill. This bill is a product of a compromise from 4 years ago. The Beer Distributors, Brewers Guild, and us worked on a thing to allow small microbrewers to self-distribute. For licensees in Oregon, you have to go through a beer distributor to get beer. This allowed some of the small microbreweries trying to break into the market to do a little self-distribution until they got big enough to hand off to a distributor. Since that point, there's really only a handful of people in the state that are doing this, and they're all bumping up against that 500 barrel cap, and so we've worked out a deal with the three parties involved again to basically just change that number from 500 to 1,000. A good example is in Representative Garrard's district, MPS Pizzeria was one of the people that originally wanted this. They're right about at their 500 level and are expected to go over it this year. So
Representative Kitts has a question.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Bill, can you say for the record who the three parties involved were?
Oregon Brewers Guild, Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association, Oregon Restaurant Association.
Thank you.
Are you finished?
Yep. All done.
Okay.
Be happy to answer
questions
any questions.
On Senate Bill 85. Okay. We'll call the next witness. Thank you, Bill. It's Jamie Floyd, I believe, Oregon Brewers Guild, Steelhead Brewery.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. Again, my name is Jamie Floyd, and I am current president of the Oregon Brewers Guild and the head brewer for the Steelhead Brewing Company in Eugene, Oregon. Very briefly, I just wanted to say that the Oregon Brewers Guild is very happy to be working with the Oregon Restaurant Association and the wholesalers in the state of Oregon on this. When this was initially passed, there was a little skepticism with everybody and how this might work out, and we're all very happy to see that this plan has worked. I just wanted to basically quickly expand upon that and say that the brewing in the state of Oregon is also very closely attached to the agricultural products in the state of Oregon. Most of the hops that are used by breweries in the state of Oregon come from the northern part of Oregon and some of southern Washington, and also some of the malt that's produced comes from the state of Oregon as well. So all of this works really hand in hand with the entire state of Oregon. And is there any questions you have?
I'd just be interested in Steelhead Brewery. Can you just tell us how old the brewery is?
How it started? Steelhead Brewery opened its doors in 1991. I believe that we were the 10th small brewery to open in the state of Oregon. Our current barrelage is at 1,500 barrels, roughly, so this would not affect us, but as a leader of the Oregon Brewers Guild and supporter of small breweries, I'm doing that, and I also know that the person that I work for supports it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Call Jim, I think it's Parker, Oregon Brewers Guild. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Jim Parker. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Brewers Guild, which means I'm the one paid employee, so I'm the shipping clerk, publicity guy, media relations. I call myself the beer evangelist for Oregon. I wanted just to clarify one thing and also expand on a couple things that Bill said. This is actually only affects brew pubs, brewery public house licenses. From the outset, microbreweries or any brewery, there isn't a microbrewery license. There's a brewery license and brewery public house license, which are the two licenses that allow you to make malt beverage. Brew pubs, as Jamie said, there are his brew pub and there are actually 10 other brew pubs in the state that won't be affected by this bill. Out of 71 breweries in the state, 59 are brew pubs. There are 10 that won't be affected by this. When we had the 500 barrel limit, there were at that point 11 breweries that could take advantage of self-distribution. Five of those have now hit that limit, including me and Pia's and Laurelwood Public House, Bill's Tavern. So we've got five of them that have hit that limit. We've also got another 12 that are McMenamin's pubs that are above that limit, and then the rest of the brew pubs in the state now will be able to take advantage of that. And that was all I had to add, unless there are any questions.
Well, I guess it'd be fair to say then that this industry is growing in Oregon.
Definitely. Particularly brew pubs. there are, of the breweries in the state, 15 are under the brewery license, which is separate thing. So this will affect quite a few brew pubs, which are where most of the growth in the state is coming.
And do you have any figures on how much this adds to the Oregon economy?
The total beer industry? There have been national studies that gauge the small brewery impact. Unfortunately, the most recent one was while we still had the Blitz Brewery here. At that point, the total estimated economic impact was $1.9 billion, including restaurants, tourism, agriculture, transportation.
Representative
Kitz? Isn't it fair to say, and I want make sure that I'm uncertain, I'm asking for clarification, that in Oregon, total beer consumption, 10% is from microbreweries in relation to...
At least 10% is from microbreweries within the state.
Okay, and roughly on a national average, it's about 3%, right?
3.
So
the next closest state to us is Colorado at 5. So it truly is a homegrown, it's a very important Oregon industry.
Representative Gerard.
Peter, I'd just say if members of this committee could taste some of Rod Cacera's red, that they would certainly feel more inclined to vote for this bill.
Well, with this, Rod will be able to spread that joy throughout the state, and he has started doing some distribution in Eugene and in Portland, which if this bill didn't pass, he'd have to stop within the next 2 months when he goes to that 500-barrel limit.
Did you say he's going to start distribution in Salem?
He has some in Eugene and Portland, and Salem's in between.
Did you say the state capital?
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jim. It's fascinating, and it looks like you're out there competing hard, so we want to make
it possible. We're doing
our best. Representative Merkley.
Madam Chair, thank you. Is it difficult to get a distributor's license, or why is it that the brew pubs don't simply
go through a distributor? One reason, and I don't know if Paul's going to speak, but he could really speak to this also. Breweries can't get a distributor license. Breweries brew beer, or brewery public houses. Distributors, it's part of the whole three-tier system, manufacturer, wholesaler, retailer. This will allow manufacturers to sell to retailers without going through a wholesaler. And the reason is some of these small breweries, they can't attract a wholesaler. Most of the larger wholesalers, talking out of this 1,000 barrels of total production, they're probably going to self-distribute 200-300 barrels total. That isn't worth warehousing space, setting up SKUs, doing all the computer work to carry a brand. So this allows the brew pub to build their brand to the point they can hand it off to a wholesaler. Because once you get over about 1,000, however many barrels, you don't have time to go out and deliver it. You're too busy making beer. Mm-hmm. You let a professional wholesaler take care of it. Uh-huh. It also allows you to get someone on your staff qualified to be a salesman, a brand representative for your beer, so that when you hand it off to the wholesaler, you have an in-house person that's intimate with that beer that can work hand-in-hand with the wholesaler and make it a successful brand in the market.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 85. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 85. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate Bill 85 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves Senate Bill 85 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Merkley?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Kitts?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Close?
Votes aye. Motion carries. And Representative Kitts, because he has so much interest in this issue, will carry the bill. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on, close the work session on Senate Bill 85, open a work session on House Bill 2248. Okay. Alana, would you come forward? Carrie, would you like to come forward too? Committee, we've had testimony on this bill before, but I'll have Megan just refresh your memory on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2248 imposes an examination fee for licensing of professions involving propane gas, increases fees for the installation of propane gas licenses, and increases the fees for gas dealer storage tank inspections at dealer plants. There is a -1 amendment that we're considering today, which requires the State Fire Marshal's Office to collect a plan review fee from the installer not to exceed $100 for each tank, which is it requires a plan review under the State Fire Code. Thank you.
Okay, we have a -1 amendment. Would you like to run us through the changes with the -1?
Okay. What the Representative Close and members of the committee, what the -1 amendment does is it moves a section of House Bill 2249 into House Bill 2248, and it's a plan review fee that is proposed to be established in the propane program for the plan review of the large above-ground propane tanks that are installed in the state.
And it also establishes. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. It also puts, rather than a reasonable fee, it establishes a monetary amount of $100 so that it's consistent with the monetary amount in the rest of our statute.
Okay, and the deletions, can you run us through what the deletions do?
Members.
Just so we moving the numbers up.
Representative Close, members of the committee, are you talking about deletions in House Bill 2248?
No, I was talking about the dash one amendment. I believe you're just moving sections around, aren't you?
Yes. Right.
In the deletions?
Yes.
There, lines 6 through 10?
Yes. We're just moving a section from 2249 into House Bill 2248.
And renumbering.
And renumbering, yes.
But. Questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. Committee, this has a referral to Ways and Means. We would need to move the dash one amendment up. Representative Gallegos?
Madam Chair, I move that we move the dash one amendment into 2248.
Okay. Representative Gallegos has moved the dash one amendment into House Bill 2284. Excuse me. My staff got this wrong.
48.
Is there discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Chair, I move. Madam Gallegos?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2248 to Ways and Means.
As amended?
As amended. Let the due pass.
Okay. Representative Gallegos has moved House Bill 2248 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative
Taylor? Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Kitt?
Aye.
Representative
Kitt?
Aye.
Aye. Both aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2248 goes to Ways and Means. Thank you very much. And I'm going to close the work session on 2248. Okay, is there anything else for the good of the committee? Thank you, committee. You did a stellar job this morning, and I hope you all have a good weekend. We are adjourned. Okay.
And a happy Valentine's Day to all.
And happy patriots.
That's right. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Right.
Cake day.
Yeah. I got.
Are you done?
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I got you.
I wasn't hand dipping last night.
It's 3 a.m.
This is from Megan.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't take the clip off it, you don't see where she's from. Hi, Erin. Good morning.